This is URN Sport.
I bloody love football.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Big Monday Night In here on URN Sport, where we debunk, dissect, discuss, debate all the big headlines from the weekend's Premier League action. And to help us do it this week, delighted to be joined by Reese, Benji, Alex and Pavan. Let's start, gents, on Friday night at the King Power Stadium, where Champions League hopefuls Leicester City and FA Cup finalist Leicester City were beaten by 4-2 by Steve Bruce's Newcastle United, the two racing into a 4-0 lead. Benji thoroughly enjoyed his Friday night, I'm sure. Newcastle were 3-0 up after 64 minutes in that game. Absolutely astonishing start to that match. We'll talk about Leicester, I think, in a little bit more detail, because we focused on Newcastle a few weeks ago about their resurgence. They're currently up to 14th now at the moment, 11 points clear of the relegation zone. Leicester, Pavan, I mean, a lot was said a couple of weeks ago about, you know, potentially were they going to implode like they did last season and miss out on Champions League football. And they kind of weathered the storm a little bit in the absence of Jamie Vardy. Kelechi Iheanacho was performing so well, and it looked like they'd kind of got through that difficult period. As it stands, they're 5 points off West Ham in fifth after West Ham's defeat yesterday to Everton. 6 points ahead of Liverpool, but Liverpool do have a game in hand. And with Leicester's fixtures coming up, which include games against Chelsea, both in the FA Cup final and in the league, a trip to Manchester United tomorrow, and then Tottenham at home on the last day of the season, how do you rate their chances of securing that qualification?
Well, it's going to be tough. Those three fixtures are extremely hard, and especially if they're going to be prioritising the cup final, he's going to be having to rest players and juggle his squad. And it's already quite thin as it is. So, yeah, it's probably going to come right down to the wire, although I don't see West Ham catching them just after that loss. I think they might fall away. They might still get Europa League, but I think, yeah, Liverpool are probably the biggest contenders for the top four spot. But yeah, it's going to come right down to the wire, and they need Iheanacho to keep scoring and that midfield to keep kind of ticking over, because going 4-0 down at home to Newcastle is pretty damning, despite, you know, what everything they've achieved. So They do need to get one of Champions League football or an FA Cup final. Otherwise, the whole bottling mentality will be stuck back onto them, and they'll kind of struggle to shake it off.
They've lost to a number of teams at home this season, Alex, including Everton. They've lost to Aston Villa, now Newcastle. Fulham actually went there earlier in the season and won at the King Power Stadium as well. So it's been a place that they haven't really been able to call home for a long, long time. What do you attribute that to? And also, similarly to Pavan, how do you kind of rate their chances of getting into the Champions League based on that performance and recent form?
It's obviously very easy to associate Brendan Rodgers with mentality based on his kind of history as a manager. But ultimately, like, I genuinely can't come up with a better explanation than that. I mean, Leicester almost overperformed for 80% of the season. They did that last season. They seem to be doing that this season as well. And then if they missed out on the Champions League for a second time in a row, you know, will it go down as a disappointing season? Yes, because of where they were. But then you could argue, I remember at the start of the season, we predicted kind of Leicester to finish eighth or ninth. So they're overperforming, competing for the top four, but then not getting it there in the end is really disappointing, which is quite an interesting dynamic. And I think, yeah, conceding 4 goals, wasn't it, to Newcastle, is difficult to explain as well, because one thing Brendan Rodgers has done really well this season is adapt defensively. Both Kagalo Asiunchu and Johnny Evans have had injuries that have sort of kept them out for long periods of the season. Obviously, Ricardo Pereira didn't come back in. And, you know, some of their most impressive performers have been the likes of Timothy Castagna, James Justin pre-injury, and Wesley Fofana. So, you know, the fact that that was allowed to happen is really difficult to explain. And, you know, if Leicester end up outside the Champions League, obviously, yeah, they've got three difficult games, three games that I genuinely don't... I could see the next three games. It's Spurs, United and Chelsea, isn't it? I could see all those games being draws. I genuinely don't see Leicester potentially losing them, but I can't really see Leicester getting a win there. You know, it's another difficult season for Brendan Rodgers.
Absolutely. Well, the pressure is certainly on the Northern Irishmen as they approach the business end of the season. The early game on Saturday, Reece, saw Leeds topple Tottenham by 3-1 at Elland Road. Leeds have not lost to the Big Six at home all season. The Big Six, in inverted commas, have been extremely impressive on home soil, and that is without a crowd. And of course, the famous Leeds United home support is something that that was built up at the start of the season, and they haven't had the opportunity to perform in front of them. So speaks volumes about how well they've done. Spurs, conversely, dreadful once again. I know URN Sports' very own Dan Henley was disappointed with the mentality of some of the Spurs players towards the end of the game, including a certain Mr. Harry Kane. Is it fair to say just Spurs are on the beach at the minute, or do you think there's a deeper problem at that football club that's going to take a while to uproot and solve?
Yeah, there's something deep there, I think, unfortunately for Spurs. It's been a really odd season for them in terms of what's gone on with, you know, Mourinho, of course, getting in Ryan Mason, 29 years old. You know, there doesn't seem to be a plan in place. And I think the future of Harry Kane is now more uncertain than ever. You know, still yet to win a trophy after Spurs' cup final defeat to Manchester City. And you know, they looked more likely to win a trophy a couple of years ago and a couple of years before that than they do now or moving forward, in my opinion. And I'm sure others would probably share that, you know. I think if Kane wants to win something, he needs to go. And I think it's starting to dawn on him now because he's not a spring chicken anymore. And, you know, he is getting to that sort of prime of his career if he's not in it already. Yeah, just really poor from Leeds' first goal. Reguilon on his heels, sort of deflects it into Lloris, who then has to make an amazing save. But then Stuart Dallas is just there to stab it in. They just didn't seem at the races. But you got to give credit to Leeds. What a season they've had. You know, they have had their stick for, you know, letting in quite a few goals. But I think the hardest thing in football is to score goals. And you see the reasons why a lot of teams go down is because they can't score goals. Leeds can certainly score goals. And that is why they are safely staying in this division for another year. And their fans will get to see them play in the Premier League live.
Yeah, definitely. That is a mission accomplished for Bielsa's side. On Leeds, Benji, you know, Reece alluded to, they've been mightily impressive this season. They were very good against Spurs on Saturday. Excellent against the so-called bigger sides at home this season. They strike me as a side, you know, going into next season, who you can probably safely say they're only going to get better next season. Where do you see Bielsa and Leeds going next season with another summer of recruitment behind them?
Well, it's safe to say I don't see second season syndrome happening at Leeds United. I think they're too good for that. And I really think they've matured over these last few weeks. And it's been, I think that's fair to say, given that they've been conceding fewer goals. And across the season, we were seeing Leeds going to places and being very brave, albeit conceding a ton of goals, namely Old Trafford when they leaked six to Manchester United. They went to Spurs, conceded three, went to Arsenal, conceded four. So Leeds have realised that I think their approach was a bit too aggressive and they really need to shore up defensively. And I think that's where they've got to look to in the transfer window. They can definitely build on their current position, their 10th place with 50 points. And I think that's a very impressive first season. And I think there was a lot of discussion about Leeds before this season, saying some expected them to, obviously Leeds have this history, a massive club, and some thought they might return to top six, but I thought that was a little too far. And I think this is a really good place for them to go and build, and it will rely on Marcelo Bielsa staying, and there'll be quite a few clubs that might try to tempt him away, but I think he likes it there. And as long as they address some key issues that they can improve on in the summer, I think they really can build on where they are now.
Absolutely. Well, they've got an extremely solid foundation on which to build, like you say, Benji, ahead of the next campaign. The next match took place at Bramall Lane, where bottom of the table Sheffield United were beaten by 2-0 by Crystal Palace. Not a lot to say about this game, as is so often the case with matches involving these two teams. But one player I wanted to talk about briefly, Pavan, is Eberry Eze. Somebody that obviously arrived into the Premier League with a lot of hype after his performances in the Championship for Queen's Park Rangers over the last few seasons. And we've seen real glimpses of quality from him this season for the Eagles, perhaps not on a consistent basis. How much of that you attribute to him, or how much of it you attribute to the manager, Roy Hodgson, that's up to you. But he scored a brilliant individual goal for Palace at Bramall Lane on Saturday. How do you assess his debut season in the top flight? And, you know, it's likely that Roy Hodgson's going to depart Crystal Palace at the end of this season, and that you may look to bring in a more attacking, progressive manager. In that case, you know, how far can this attacking midfielder go?
I think he can go kind of all the way to the top, especially if somebody like an Eddie Howe comes in and, you know, puts him in more of a kind of central role, or pairs him up, gets him, you know, more time on the ball, because he has impressed quite a lot this season, and it's offered Palace a different dynamic. Because if you play Palace, you normally know if you defend their left hand side with Zaha and if he plays at striker on the left, then you know you can kind of block them that side. Whereas if you've got Eze on one side and Zaha on the other, it does offer a different dynamic, and then you can feed Benteke and Mateta up front. But yeah, I think he's really good. He didn't quite get utilised properly at England under 21s, which, I mean, nobody did really there. But yeah, he's been a good signing, quite a bit of money from the Championship, but lots of potential. And I think if they get the right manager in, he can kind of clock up some good figures, maybe double figures for goal and assists next season. But a very good debut season for him.
Absolutely, yeah. He's performed extremely well at times for Palace, and with a more consistent run in the first team, then who knows where he can go next season. Manchester City took on Chelsea this weekend in kind of a precursor to their Champions League final in a few weeks' time. And it was the visitors who came out on top, goals from Ziyech and a sloppy, scruffy Marcus Alonso strike, winning it for the Blues. Obviously, the game was characterised by Sergio Aguero's penalty miss just before the end of the first half. Of course, if City had won that game, they would have wrapped up the Premier League title. Reece, it wasn't that long ago that we were saying on this show that the gap between Manchester City and everybody else was, you know, miles, they were, you know, leagues above everyone else in terms of quality and ability and depth of squad. I appreciate it's an isolated game and City weren't at their best during it, but Chelsea proved that they're not that far away from them. And heading into the Champions League final in a few weeks' time, they must take so much confidence from how Saturday's game at the Etihad went.
Absolutely. You know, they've since Tuchel's come in, you know, it shows what an amazing manager can do. I mean, obviously it's not a miracle job. They've got unbelievable players, but, you know, just someone good to guide them and use them effectively. And, you know, since he's come in, they've knocked City out of the cup, you know, ruined their quadruple chances, and they've delayed them winning the Premier League. So they will take a lot of heart from their last two games against City. And surely it will give them a lot of hope before the Champions League final, for sure. And it was interesting to see Marcus Alonso coming back in and getting the winner. He does tend to pop up with goals, but City should have been out of sight. You know, Marcus Alonso was only able to win that game for Chelsea after Sergio Aguero's car crash of a penalty. Absolutely shocking. It's a weird one, isn't it, Panenka penalties? Because, when it comes off, it comes off. It's like, wow, what a genius. And when it doesn't, you look like an absolute fool. And I think that's why, isn't it? Because it's so risky. But Chelsea, more than Match City, I think in a way that the cheek of Aguero might have spurred them on, and gave them heart. You know, the fact they went in, dressing room, could have been 2-0. Well, it's only 1-0. We can get back into this. We got the players. And sure enough, they did. Ziyech scored in his last two games against City. And Blues fans will be hoping that he can make it 3 at the end of this month at Wembley.
Absolutely. It was a really impressive performance and result for Chelsea, continuing to make massive strides under Thomas Tuchel's tutelage. That was easy for me to say. Moving on to the late game of the Saturday, Mr. Alex Duke, this one is all over to you. Liverpool 2, Southampton 0. Of course, a match defined by a breathtaking, wonderful strike from Thiago in added time, which I think we can all agree is the goal of the century. But being serious for one moment, Alex, look, it wasn't a vintage Liverpool performance by any means, but just sum up how significant a 3 points that is for Jurgen Klopp's men.
Yeah, it's a huge win, and seemingly Leicester's drop off in form and hard running potentially gives us a way back into the top four. And to be honest, I was very pessimistic after the draws, particularly the draw against Leeds and the draw against Newcastle. I really thought that was us done. That was us in the Europa League for a season. But, you know, this has potentially let us back in. We're still reliant on Leicester doing badly. It's never a position you particularly want to be in as a club. But, you know, if we end up in the top four this season, that would obviously be incredible given how difficult a season it's been for a variety of reasons. And in terms of the game itself, it was great. Like, I thought our attacking play was better. Everyone's obviously talking about Thiago's goal, but Mane scoring again was really good. Interestingly, that goal was essentially identical to the goal that Sadio Mane scored against Bayern Munich a couple of years ago in the Champions League, kind of the cross in by Mo Salah, diving header from Sadio Mane. And Thiago's goal was great as well. I know, obviously, I've talked a lot about him this season, but I'm really kind of liking him in this advanced role. He's really good at pushing up. And I think everyone obviously talks about his passing game and his ability to control in midfield. But I think some of the attacking aspects of his game are pretty good as well. His kind of runs into the box. And actually something I've been a little bit frustrated with him has been kind of his tendency to go for safe passes, particularly in games where we're not winning, where I feel like he should be more urgent. And he really kind of took it upon himself and was really, really strong. And something that's not really being talked about is that I'm pretty sure both Ruben Dias and Aymeric Laporte played this weekend and conceded 2 goals to Chelsea. And Reece Williams and Nat Phillips didn't concede any goals. So I think, you know,
And to be fair, Alex, they in comparison, obviously, Man City up against Chelsea, one of the most informed attacks in the country, and Liverpool up against the rip-roaring, thrilling attack of, Southampton.
I think context is irrelevant in this one.
When did the trophy parade you?
But it was good to see that. I mean, obviously the game that everyone will be thinking about now is the game against United. The rumours on the street are that Fabinho will go back to centre-back, which I have said many times on Outside the Box that I'm really not a fan of, because I really think it kind of messes up our whole balance. Much rather see Phillips and Williams there again if Kabak's still out, because I just think it just makes us look so much better in midfield having Fabinho there. But, you know, ultimately it was a win that we expected. I think we can't get too carried away, because Southampton are possibly the worst side in the Premier League, at least if you consider their form this year. They are, like, not very good, to put it plainly. But, you know, could potentially get us back into the Champions League conversation. So I'm relatively optimistic.
Yeah, but big win for Liverpool and a huge game coming up in a few days' time against Manchester United. Let's see whether Alex's source on the street turns out to be true. And
Anfield agenda, apparently.
Okay. That's a reputable source, to be fair. Let's see if that's proved to be right, and we see some changes to Klopp's approach ahead of that game. The first game on Sunday, again, not a match with a great deal of drama, apart from a last-minute winner and a sending-off in added time as well. Wolves 2, Brighton and Hove Albion 1. Goals from Adama Traore and Morgan Gibbs-White. Brighton down to 9 men in the end after sendings off to Lewis Dunk and Neil Morpay. Good win for Wolves, Benji. I mean, we've spoken on this podcast a lot about how underwhelmed we've been with Wolves' performance and results this season. Have you seen enough, would you say, in 2021 to suggest that next season they're going to be back to their best, if you know what I mean?
No, I really haven't. And my thoughts on Nuno are a bit controversial. I don't think he's particularly great as a manager. I honestly think that Wolves, if they really push for it, they along with the results they got against the big sides in their first couple years in the Premier League, they really could have been competing for top six or Champions League. I really think they had the quality of players to do it. And yes, they've obviously been very unfortunate with the injury to Raul Jimenez, but I don't think they've recovered since then, and there's been a lot of weight thrown onto the shoulders of particularly Fabio Silva, who's 18, and he might come good, but I think it's a bit unfair on him. It was good to see him score against West Brom the week before, albeit in lucky circumstances. But against Brighton, I mean... And in the circumstances they've done it, like, it's reminiscent of how they beat Arsenal. I hate saying this, but we had 9 men, we were 1-0 up and pretty dominant. And I honestly, we've lost to Wolves 2 times this season, and I don't know how. I don't think they're a particularly great side. And I don't know. I'm a bit harsh on them, but. Yeah, it's a good win, but they've been lackluster this season, and their position shows they've fallen from 2 consecutive 7th finishers, and they find themselves 12th with 45 points. So they don't really have much to play for. Brighton are pretty safe. So I don't know. We'll have to see if Wolves signings from the beginning of the season come good eventually. Semedo, as I said, Fabio Silva, but yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. I think they've left a lot to be desired this season, Wolves, and have got a lot to improve on if they are to get back into European contention next season. From one Midlands club to another now, Pavan, Aston Villa 1, Manchester United 3. Brilliant comeback yet again by the Red Devils on the road. Villa went ahead for a brilliant Bertrand Traore goal, but United turned it round superbly in that second half. Benji has said, sorry to throw Benji under the bus a little bit here, he said throughout the season that United's kind of ability to come back away from home, it's not sustainable. It's something that will catch them out. Eventually, they can't keep falling behind and picking up 3 points on their travels. I mean, they seem to be doing it. And with the signing of Edison Cavani for another year earlier today, strikes me that kind of trait from their game is not going to go away for a long time. They seem to be an absolute machine when it comes to away performances and results.
Yeah, I mean, I have been inclined to agree with Benji on that opinion, to be honest with you. But the thing is, if they want to really push a City or a Liverpool, if they get back to the best next season and actually win a major trophy, it's that old saying that. Attacks win you games, but defenses win you titles. And if you keep, I know it's the odd goal here and then they come back, but there will be times when you're up against it and you're not playing well. And, Fernandez might not have a good game or somebody might be injured. and you won't be able to do that comeback, and it will really hurt your title charge. So, it's a pretty special trait to have. And kind of, you know, if they could pick some silverware up and pick up the Europa League trophy, I think that would kind of put a lot of confidence into skeptics. But the kind of defensive side of the game, if they want to win a title, they are going to have to kind of take the ball by the horns and really kind of go out and smash teams and limit them to few or no opportunities, because defenses are the things that win you the major honours.
Yeah, definitely. I think if they can get that Europa League crown, that would be a brilliant end to what has been a very progressive season for United. But of course, that Europa League final is not a formality. Villarreal are a very, very tough team indeed. From that game then in the West Midlands between Aston Villa and Manchester United to another game involving a claret and blue side, West Ham United 0, Everton 1, a Dominic Calvert-Lewin strike after 24 minutes, giving the Toffees all 3 points and perhaps an opportunity to sneak back into European football contention. Reece, I'll turn to you for this one. Really disappointing from West Ham, especially considering Leicester's defeat on the Friday. Everton, on the other hand, I mean, a fabulous result for them. They seem to just, there's that classic line from The Godfather, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in again. And that is exactly what this Everton team...
Godfather 3, James.
Godfather 3, yeah. I know,
it's the worst one.
It is the worst one, I appreciate that. But Everton have that ability to drag you back in when you least expect it. How do you rank both teams' chances for Europe based on what you saw yesterday?
Yeah, I think the way West Ham were playing, I do remember saying it and then sort of getting proved wrong because they kept putting in great performances, but I'll harp back to that. It just seemed like it wasn't going to be sustainable, the amount of goals they were scoring, you know, especially sort of the style of goals they were scoring. Although I thought West Ham played pretty well yesterday and were a bit unlucky. And they, you know, they missed some very good chances. But that's the way the cookie crumbles, I think. I think they're more encouraging than Leicester at the moment. Just if we're basing it off extremely recent performances, because there's no shame in losing to Everton at home this season. They do seem to be better on the road than at Goodison. I don't think it would be too demoralising for them. Whereas obviously we've already spoken about Leicester's really poor showing at home to Newcastle, who, you know, just a few weeks ago we were absolutely put into the sword with our words. So at the moment, even though I get every single prediction wrong, and this will mean that West Ham don't get it, I feel like West Ham are the more likely at the moment, despite them both losing. So it's essentially back to square one for both of them, and they can go again in the next match week.
I think West Ham are fortunate in the sense that they've got a relatively decent run in between now and the end of the season, and it looks like even if Liverpool are going to usurp them and jump ahead, there is potential that Leicester are going to fall out. So that despite the pressure coming from, you know, below them, there's still, you know, a room for them in European football based on the performances of those above. I also think those who are further behind than Liverpool, such as Tottenham and Everton, are not consistent enough to get back into the conversation with as we approach the last few weeks of the season. But it's going to be interesting, very disappointing defeat for them yesterday. David Moyes at the hands of his former club. Now to the Emirates, where one of the worst, weakest, most boring, tepid sides of the season took on Sam Allardyce's West Brom. And were victorious by 3-1. Actually, some great goals from Arsenal, to be fair, in this game, such as Nicolas Pepe's wonderful strike after 35 minutes and Willian's brilliant free kick. We seem to talk about Arsenal every week on this podcast. We might as well do a bit of a deep dive on this one. Reece said, Pavan, before we came on air, that it was typical Arsenal to put in a performance and a result like yesterday's, when, you know, it didn't really matter. After the disappointment of Thursday night and, you know, the general frustration with how this season has gone, you can't really read a great deal into what you saw yesterday, can you? It's nothing really to write home about, was there?
No, not really. Everyone's still kind of hurt after that, after the Thursday performance. And yeah, we have struggled at home this season, and you know, like, we could have struggled against West Brom, but I think Arteta just kept it simple with the team lineup. Thankfully, didn't try any like mysterious things. Make sure put Saka at left back, which many people were calling for him to do on Thursday night. So that's a bit of a decision. It looks like he got wrong, but it was good to see like Smith Rowe pick up his first Premier League goal, which is, you know, that's what we need to build off. Basically, it's a huge summer coming up, because, you know, this is said to be the biggest squad overhaul we've done for like decades probably. So there's going to be lots of people leaving, and kind of good recruitment is going to be needed. Otherwise, we are going to become a permanent mid-table club, whether we like it or not. But yeah, in terms of the result, the pressure was off. So a good performance. Some players just looked like they had some weight lifted off their shoulders. But, you know, we've got Chelsea on Wednesday night, which will be very telling, because if we don't turn up then we know that, you know, it's kind of the same old thing. But if they can put in a bit of a performance against Chelsea and try and at least, you know, put up a bit of a fight and don't get battered, then that would be nice for the Arsenal fan base, because we're already on the floor.
Benji, what are your thoughts on Pavan's comment there about, you know, it's going to be the biggest overhaul of an Arsenal squad in a generation? Do you believe that's going to happen? And, you know, what's your take on where the summer heads to?
For me, it doesn't matter. The overhaul happens. It doesn't, quite frankly. I don't know. I think it will. I think players will go. But in the words of the Godfather, we need Daniel Ek to make Stan Kroenke a bid, an offer he can't refuse. And I don't know. Sorry. I just can't see Arsenal being good again without Stan Kroenke going. And it's all very well him going and saying that, oh, we're going to give Arsenal a transfer kitty in the summer. Why didn't you do that a few years ago when we were challenging for the title and just needed that little bit further to go and win it in 15-16, for example? I just don't buy it. And to be honest, I'm very fearful of who Arsenal can attract. Yes, we can keep telling ourselves we're a massive club, we're that, but at the end of the day, we're not going to be playing Europe. If we get into the Conference League, we may as well not even bother. I just don't know anymore. And I do have doubts over Mikel Arteta, and I do think that this job might have come too soon for him, and it's beginning to show with the lack of experience in these ties at Villarreal. And what annoys me is the players, in as Reece perfectly puts it, they turn up when it doesn't matter. We literally are prime Barcelona when it doesn't matter. It's a joke, and I've had enough. Can they not handle anything? And look, Arsene Wenger was like, he was to blame for a lot of our decline. But one thing I can say for sure is that he would have set us up in that Villarreal match to win 5-0. Like, there would have been no mercy. And I just hate that the team have no attacking edge, nothing going forward. And I do think, though, the problem lies beyond the manager, and Kroenke has to be the person that goes. And me advocating for Daniel Ek buying the club is more so that, I guess, fans might have representation. And I do trust the Invincibles, and I know they want what's best for the club to restore Arsenal DNA. And anyone, Daniel Ek is definitely better than the Kroenkes. And I've lost trust with it. And believe me, I'll say this, I'm excited for every season coming. I managed to get into the spirit of things, but that won't happen anymore. I've just lost a lot of passion, especially with all the Super League business. But our decline has been going on for years, and it won't stop until the Kroenkes are out.
Well, it's a good job that Newcastle are staying up, isn't it, Benji? At least you've got them to support. And
we've got a takeover, actually, that needs to happen.
On a serious point about Arsenal, no, I think you're right. It's going to be a huge summer for the Gunners. And let's see if, with a bit more investment, Mikel Arteta can make Arsenal turn into prime Barcelona on a more consistent basis than against the likes of West Brom and Fulham. Reece, last question about Arsenal for you. You put in the group chat on Thursday night, this is the worst Arsenal season in my lifetime. Arteta has to go. Has your opinion over the last few days mellowed at all, or is it the same perspective for you?
Well, after that incredible performance yesterday, no. There's no sort of plan. I think when he first took over, there was a bit of an identity in. I remember he came in, he talked about these non-negotiables, and he had all these very high standards, and it all seemed very exciting. And you're thinking, well, he's just been at City, and obviously they're incredible under Pep. But that's just, this season has been an absolute joke. When we talk about non-negotiables, why is Danny Ceballos still starting games, especially when our season is now effectively over and these last few Premier League games are glorified friendlies? Well, they have been since around March time, to be honest, any Premier League match. Why are we still playing Danny Ceballos when we're not going to keep him? I don't really understand it. I think I don't want to pick holes in an Arsenal win, but that would have been a perfect opportunity to blood some more youngsters, like maybe Aziz in the midfield rather than Ceballos. Might have been nice to see. He tries to play it safe, but when he plays it safe, it seems to be the wrong decision, sticking with Willian and all these players. When his back was properly against the wall around Christmas time, that was when he got Emil Smith Rowe into the team and other youngsters, and that sort of saved his job then. And we started 2021 in a really good light and whatnot, but he just seems to have drifted away from that again. And I think when we won the cup, obviously at the end of last season, he was a coach. But make no mistake, last season was still pretty terrible, and that FA Cup was just a nice little silver lining that got us into Europe. Let's not forget as well that we only got into the Europa League because of our FA Cup win. So this is two seasons in a row now where we haven't finished in the European places, which is just absolutely disgraceful for Arsenal Football Club. But what did our leadership do? They went, okay, well, you've managed three FA Cup games, or however. It would have been a few more than that, but you know what I mean? You've managed a few FA Cup games successfully. Here's the manager's job now. And I think the whole hierarchy is in an absolute mess. It doesn't just lie with Arteta. I think if Arteta goes, so too does Edu. And yeah, I think we just need an absolutely gigantic overhaul. But it's not just Arteta that's the problem, although I do think he is part of the problem. So in a very long-winded way, no, my opinion has not changed. I think big changes need to happen for Arsenal to keep up, really.
Final word on the match at the Emirates, Alex, goes to you. There are two sides to the story, and West Brom lost yesterday, which means that they have been relegated straight back to the Championship, despite the appointment of Sam Allardyce earlier in the season. He couldn't keep them up, meaning it's the first club that he's been with that have been relegated. Desperately disappointing for the Black Countryside. Two questions about West Brom. Where did it go wrong for them this season, in your opinion? And secondly, do you see Allardyce sticking around next season to try and bring them up at the first attempt?
Well, I'd say, in answer to the first question, I just think it's kind of a lack of quality, really. Like, simply put, I know they did really well last season in the Championship, but I don't think they've ever been properly equipped in terms of the personnel they have for the Premier League, with the exception of a couple of really interesting individuals. I mean, Mateus Pereira was unbelievable, and his goal yesterday was fantastic as well. And Sam Johnston potentially being another example. Maybe a couple of the guys in midfield. The guy who's on loan from Chelsea, whose name has just escaped me.
Conor Gallagher.
Yeah, Conor Gallagher, so that's a bit embarrassing. But yeah, him and a couple of other players, they look decent, but I just feel, yeah, they were never properly equipped. I mean, there was a question mark over whether they should have even sacked Slaven Bilic in the first place, and I actually think that was probably the wrong decision. Slaven Bilic attempted to kind of install a very attack-minded style of play, and going from that to Sam Allardyce would have been a really big change. People forget as well, Sam Allardyce has been out of the game for a couple of years. And obviously it was done on reputation. Sam Allardyce is usually brilliant at these kind of situations, getting teams out of trouble. But for the first time in his career, he's been exposed. Well, not he's been exposed, but he's just not been able to get West Brom out of this one. I imagine both Johnston and Pereira will leave. I mean, we kind of said this about a lot of the Norwich players when a lot of them ended up staying because of kind of the COVID transfer market. But I really, you know, with clubs like potentially Everton and Southampton, kind of established Premier League clubs looking for a new goalkeeper, you'd think kind of Sam Johnston would leave and Mateus Pereira would kind of fit in. He could arguably fit in at a top six club, to be honest, but I could see him doing well at somewhere like a Wolves or a Southampton, that or an Aston Villa. Kind of club that needs a kind of quality winger with a good bit of end product. Do I think Allardyce will stay? I mean, apparently talks were held today over whether he will. Apparently he doesn't know if he has it in him, apparently. But in other interviews, I'm not entirely sure, don't quote me on it, but I think he said that he's interested. And I'm actually quite pro the idea of Sam Allardyce staying. I mean, I think he did a really good job with West Ham, taking them. Obviously, he took over when they were in the Championship and they came up very comfortably. I think he's certainly got the quality to take them up. But in the end, I mean, I love a good phrase. I just don't think they could cut the mustard in the end.
Interesting stuff. Well, I think it'd be quite good to see Allardyce stay because, you know, with that relegation, we'll certainly kind of checker his CV somewhat. So if he can get a promotion to finish, that would be the perfect kind of antidote to that. We should say, incidentally, that West Brom will be joined in the Championship next season, it looks like, by Fulham, who are currently trailing by 2-0 at half-time against Burnley. Looks like Scott Parker's side are tumbling back to the Championship as well, but we will release a full comment on that when that is confirmed. 2-0 down to Burnley as it stands. That marks an end to another Big Monday Night in podcast. My big thanks to Benji, Pavan, Alex and Rhys for joining us this evening. Euro in Sport returns tomorrow with the Sports Centre, which will be hosted by Mr. Duke on Euro in Sport 1350.net between 6 and 7pm. There's a whole host of fantastic podcasts. We were talking before we came on air about Chatting Like Champions, a fantastic assessment of the Champions League and Europa League semi-finals. So please do give that a listen. Plenty more coming from Euro in Sport in the next few days. And you can keep up to date with everything we're getting up to via our Twitter and Facebook page at Euro in Sport. But in the meantime, stay safe, stay well, and we will see you next week on the Big Monday Night In.